on the Golf Club Network, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Okay, overlooking Oahu's South Shore on this very windy, blustery day. We've got a high wind advisory for all of the islands except Lanai until 6 o'clock this evening. It's going to be a cloudy, windy day with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the morning. And, of course, we've got rain for most of the islands for most of the day. But first, let's thank our sponsors before we go any further. Marilyn Smith will be joining us, LPGA founder, co-founder, of course. But first, our sponsors who make the show possible.
The Golf Club, brought to you by Alakai Mechanical, the best minds in plumbing, air conditioning, and sheet metal. When you need a new roof, flashing, gutters, downspouts, AC ducts, or a commercial kitchen and custom stainless steel counters, it's Alakai Mechanical. Also brought to you by Poipu Bay Golf Course, combining the beauty of nature and the design of Robert Trent Jones Jr. Bordered by emerald green mountains, 30 acres of tropical plants, and ancient places of worship. Poipu Bay Golf Course, Kauai's South Shore gem. And by Star Protection, for property threat and risk assessment, protection for your home or business or special event. Get the Star Team on your property. Star Protection is what you need in Hawaii and California.
And by Dr. Melanie Tantazera, True Vision Center. Join us at the Health and Wellness Expo. We're going to be at the Honolulu Club on March 13th, 6 o'clock until 9 o'clock. That's in the evening on March 13th. And you can register for a prize worth, $1,000. Mm-hmm. All the booths will have prizes you can register for. That's March 13th, 6 to 9 o'clock in the evening at the Honolulu Club. It's the Health and Wellness Expo. Let's bring in now my dear friend, Marilyn Smith. Welcome to the Golf Club.
Hi, Danielle. How are you?
Excellent. And you?
Oh, we have beautiful sunshine. You should be here. Well, maybe we can send you some sunshine there.
We could use it. We've had 6 days of rain. And we even had a tornado yesterday. A waterspout came ashore. It was very strange. We had hail on all of the islands on Oahu the size of golf balls.
Good grief. That's unusual for you.
Yes, extremely. So we've had some very unusual conditions. We're looking forward to the sun coming up or back to us at least sometime next week, early next week. Let's talk about the R.R. Donnelly Founders Cup. You are one of 13 founders of the LPGA in 1950. And R.R. Donnelly Founders Cup, it starts this week.
Yes, it's the 15th to the 18th of March at the J.W. Marriott Desert Ridge Resort and Spa, the Wildfire Golf Course.
Yes.
Northeast Phoenix.
It's going to be beautiful. I've heard Christina Kim loves being there. She's already, I believe, in town, as are a number of other players. Did you, when you put together the LPGA with the 13 of you all together, did you ever think that you'd be celebrated by this huge organization now of LPGA professionals, both touring professionals and teaching professionals, and all of the fans? How does that feel?
Of course not. We just kind of went from day to day in those early days, Danielle, because it was very difficult. Babe Zaharias, you know, was our marquee player. She was Olympic champion, and everybody would come out to see her play. And then when she passed away in 1956, it was a critical time in the time of the LPGA, so we had to do a lot of public relations work to keep the tour going. But it's fantastic. You know, the R.R. Donnelly, they're the world's largest printing company of books and magazines and catalogs, and they're just a fantastic company, and we're so proud to have them, you know, sponsor this great event.
But what's it like being celebrated like you are now?
Well, it's wonderful. You know, we have a great organization. Our Commissioner Juan is doing a great job. He and all the folks that work at the Daytona Beach headquarters, and 13 founders, only four of us are still living. And Shirley Spork is going to play in the Pro-Am on Wednesday.
Fabulous.
She's going to play with the Commissioner Juan. And then the Hall of Famers are going to have an exhibition. Nancy Lopez, Pat Bradley, and Patty Sheehan are going to tee off on Sunday at 8:20 to lead the field, you know, before they tee off. And that's going to be fun, too. So everything is really, it's first class, and we're just proud to be to be a part of it. It's wonderful, Danielle.
You were, when I was thinking, you were 20 years old when, right?
Yes.
Who was the oldest in the group?
Oh, golly. Babe Zaharias, maybe.
Okay.
We were all different ages and came from different parts of the country, but everybody kind of had their own capabilities and their charisma to help the tour get going, you know. In those early days, in 1950, we had 13 events, and the total prize money was $100,000. And they're playing for what, close to $47 million this year?
I know. Yeah, this event is $1.5 million,
yes.
Right?
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. I think it's 132 players. How many players were in the LPGA, the touring professionals, when you girls started?
Well, just 13 of us.
Just 13, but when you went out to play an event, there were 13 playing?
Oh, sometimes only 10.
Oh!
But the amateurs, you see, made up our field.
Ah.
And we didn't, I was fortunate, I had a wonderful contract with the Spalding Sporting Goods Company. They paid me $5,000 a year and had my name on golf clubs and an unlimited expense account. And I would give golf demonstrations around the United States. I'm sorry, someone's knocking at my door. My dog's barking.
Benny.
Benny.
Taking care of you.
Remember Benny?
Yes, I do. I do.
We were so happy to have you and your husband with us last year, Danielle, at my tournament. Not my tournament.
It is your tournament. Yes, when you raise money for...
My golf scholarship fund.
Scholarship fund, yes.
Sorry about my dog.
No, don't worry about Benny. He's totally cool. You are also 12 years old when you were the coach manager of an all boys baseball team.
I was the pitcher coach and the manager, and I came home from pitching a game one day and my mother asked me how I did, and I threw my mitt against the wall and I said a four-letter word I'd picked up from the boys, and she marched me into the laboratory and washed my mouth out with Lifebuoy. So when my dad came home, she told him what I had said, and my dad said, we better take her out to the Wichita Country Club. That's Wichita, Kansas. And teach her more ladylike sports.
Okay, so that's how you got into golf?
That's how I got into golf. I thought, what a sissy game. You know, you hit a ball and chase after it. But you certainly find out how humbling it is, and it's something you never master. And, you know, I've been in all 50 states and 37 countries and given over 4,000 golf clinics. So it's just been a marvelous career, and I have to pinch myself when I realize all the places I've been.
Yeah. I was curious, though, do you think women in the 50s were better prepared to go into this business that you all went into, creating the LPGA?
Oh, I don't think we had no idea. You know, Fred Corcoran was the agent for Babe Zaharias and Ted Williams, and he wanted a venue for her to play, so that's how we started the LPGA in my hometown of Wichita, Kansas, in 1950 at the Rolling Hills Country Club. I can still remember us all sitting in the lobby there when he came in and he said, well, we're going to have an LPGA tour.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. We're very lucky that this happened. You know, we had a women's PGA before that was started by a lady in North Carolina, but the money kind of ran out, and so that went down, you know, the drain, so to speak. But 1950, it was a wonderful thing, and then to see how it's grown. Gosh, it's just, and the number of teaching pros we have now, you know, maybe 1,400 or 1,500 of those teaching pros.
Yes, and they all came out to help you raise money for the scholarship. That's great. You're going to do that again this September?
Yes, it's going to be October 1st here at Pebble Creek, where I live, which is about 16 miles southwest of Phoenix. And, oh, my friend outside's calling me on my phone.
I better let you go.
No, she came over to have some coffee, and I called her and told her I was going to talk to you in Hawaii, but she'd already left.
That's quite all right. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, but I wanted to tell you that, you know, they're going to have all the top players here in the tournament. Yanni's saying, you know, number one, and so it's going to be one of the finest tournaments. Oh, another thing, too, Danielle, they're going to give $500,000 to the LPGA USGA Girls Golf.
Yes, it's fantastic. All of the people who are benefiting from this event, including the pioneers, LPGA pioneers, are being recognized. Special
yes.
tribute to Peggy Kirkbell, Betsy Rawls, Barbara Romack, and Mickey Wright.
Peggy Kirkbell. Yeah, Barbara Romack and Peggy Kirkbell will be with us. Betsy and Mickey can't make it, but and then Shirley Spork and Louise Suggs and I will be the three founders. Marlene Hagee's husband's not too well, so she won't be able to be with us.
Okay. Marilyn Smith, one of the co-founders of the LPGA, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Danielle. Keep up the good work.
Aloha. We'll talk soon. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Star Protection Agency has been providing security across Hawaii since 1991. Guards on foot, bike, and patrol cars for your business, buildings, or retail. Whether it's a store or an entire shopping center, Star Protection provides the security you need. One call does it all. 532-3911 or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection is peace of mind.
Our company has been in business more than 30 years, and we depend on Alakai Mechanical for everything. They maintain our air conditioners, sheet metal on our new roof. They just installed our new commercial kitchen. Doesn't matter if you're big business, a condo, or mom and pop store. If you want your job done on time, on budget, and done right, do what we do. Call Alakai Mechanical across the way. The best minds in air conditioning, plumbing, and sheet metal, that's Alakai Mechanical.
Waipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Waipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Waipu Bay.
You scope out the sand traps. You size up the green. You're eyeing the flag. Now, it's time to choose a club. But you don't know which one to choose?
That's when you turn to Danielle Tucker. Now, back to The Golf Club.
Very interesting week in golf this past week. A lot going on, including the selection of the gentleman who will be designing the 2016 Olympic Games golf course in Brazil. And to talk with us about that and many other things, Ron Syrak joins us, Golf World Executive Editor, Golf Digest Senior Writer, and author of Vision 54 Trilogy, Every Shot Must Have a Purpose, Play Your Best Golf Now, and The Game Before the Game. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. The first one I really wanted to touch on, you'll be at the Founders Cup.
I will, yep.
And we were just talking with Marilyn Smith a little bit about the history of how the LP... I can't imagine that happening today. 13 women coming together and creating what they did. It's just amazing.
You know, it's fascinating. I was just down visiting Louise Suggs, one of the founders, and working on a story with her, and she was saying and that the LPGA really came to be out of this exhibitions that all these women golfers were doing for equipment manufacturers. After World War II, Spalding, Wilson, McGregor decided that women's golf was going to be the next big thing. So Patty Berg went to Wilson, and Suggs was with McGregor, and I think Marilyn Smith was with Spalding.
Yes.
And they would go around to these clubs and give exhibitions to promote their products. And then they would keep running into each other, and they finally said, well, let's see if we can get these people to put up some money that we could play for. And that's how the LPGA got going.
Yeah, today it would be like a social network of people.
Yeah.
It's physically difficult to get to from one place to another, but then I think to myself, well, wait a minute, they were driving all over the country. What am I talking about? It was physically difficult for them to do what they did. There's just moments in history when something comes together at the right time and everything gels, and it's perfection. The final field, I believe, I don't know about the sponsor invites and the qualifiers. I suppose the Monday qualifiers will be decided on Monday, but this is the R.R. Donnelly Founders Cup final field, including from Hawaii, which is exciting, Ayaka Kaneko and Stephanie Kono, and of course the world number one, Yanni Sen, and Lexi Thompson. This is a great field.
It's a really great field, and it's good to see. You know, last year that they played this tournament with no purse, and there were a couple players who chose not to go there. Although I think every player who did go, once they got there, realized that it was a really, really cool event. And it's also the debut for the season in the United States.
Yes.
On the tour, after starting out with in Australia and two in Asia. And it's coming after a couple weeks off. They're now going to play three in a row at Founders Cup, the Kia Classic in California, and then the first major of the year, the Kraft Nabisco Championship. So hopefully the tour will get some momentum going, and the people will start plugging into some of the really good storylines that are out there.
Yeah, like the playoffs that we've already had, right?
We had a six-way playoff and a four-way playoff, and in between those two tournaments, Gianni Sen, the best player in the world, won. So, and we had the first six-way playoff was won by 18-year-old Jessica Korda. There's a bunch of good stories out there.
Exactly. I'm curious about the fact that there's no cut for this event.
It's interesting. I think it's all part of trying to get everybody on board with the need to use this event as to create a big platform for the tour.
Yeah.
And to really celebrate its past and its history and make people more, you know. I always feel if you ever saw the movie, A League of Their Own about the Women's Professional Baseball League, that's what this is. This is the oldest women's professional sports organization in the world and arguably the most successful. And I don't think it gets all that credit for people love to knock the tour, and yeah, they've had to scratch along at times, but they've always made it.
Women do. All right, so we have the R.R. Donnelly Founders Cup, and this week has been interesting. One note before we leave the Donnelly. Angela Stanford said she tweeted that she was excited about the LPGA Founders staying true to the concept of donating, because last year it was all for charity. Mm-hmm. She's donating half of her earnings next week to the 4AS Foundation Birdies. And that's it. It's great. I know she's in a financial position. She can do that. And while others on the tour and in the field don't have that kind of, they haven't won yet and they're struggling, it's really hard to make a living on the LPGA tour. And I just hope that more success comes its way so that the women don't have to work so darn hard.
And I think that it's a reminder too that there is no sport in all of sports that gives back as much as golf does. All the events are tied to charities in some way. Right now, most of the players have foundations that support their special interests in charities. And if you look at it, not just on the professional level, how many golf outings do you go to a year that are fundraisers for breast cancer or for any other Special Olympics, any other causes like that? And the game on every level, from amateurs to the professional, gives back more than any other sport.
I want to change over to somebody who really knows how to promote himself, Donald Trump.
Yes, he does.
Is he good for the game?
He gives back to himself.
Exactly.
But, he's one of those guys, it's sort of like when George Steinbrenner was owning the New York Yankees, and not everything he did you'd agree with, not everything he did you could justify, but he created publicity for his team.
Certainly does, and that's
and
what
Donald Trump did that.
Yeah.
And he used to run the ADT Championship at Trump International in West Palm. Was really, really, really a great event, and he treated the players first class, put them up in Mar-a-Lago, and he's been a huge supporter of women's golf.
Okay, so he buys Doral.
Yep.
And he thinks it's a 800 acres right smack in the middle of Miami, a tremendous opportunity. What is he going to do with Doral?
Yeah, he's right about that. This place was started in, 1960 by a husband-wife team, Doris and Al. That's where Doral comes from. And it was a resort for the New Yorkers on the pipeline down to Miami in the winter. It's fallen on hard times several times since I've been going down there. Well, he's coming in. He's spent $150 million to buy the property, and he's going to put another $150 million into it, $140 into renovating the rooms and that part of the resort,
uh-huh.
And $10 million into the Blue Monster Golf Course. Gil Hance is going to come in, And it sounds like he's going to build six or seven absolutely new holes. And we ran his schematic for his plan in Golf World Monday last week, and it's pretty impressive. It's an odd pairing of people. Donald Trump, who's as untraditional as you can get, and Gil Hance, who's a very traditional architect.
It was also perfection. The timing couldn't be better. Gil Hance has chosen to build the golf course for the 2016 Olympic Games. And the same day, the day after, Donald Trump says, oh, by the way, I'm using him for my golf course.
Yeah, the timing was pretty good on that. There's nobody who knows how to get publicity better than Donald.
Oh, tell me. Oh, boy. Well, I just hope he, as I said earlier in the last month, I want him to keep that hotel the way it was. It has something to it that needs to be. I know his name's going to be on it, but I hope it's tastefully attached.
Well, let's put it this way. Donald is known for going over the top.
Yeah.
They used to have, during the ADT Championship, the LPGA Awards dinner would be during that tournament, and it would be at Mar-a-Lago. And this is the old Marjorie Merriweather post from the post-serial fortune opulent mansion that she built for herself in the 20s. And he went in there. That had a property that had fallen on hard times, and he went in, he took it over, and he really restored it to its opulence, you know. And he restored it very true to what it was in the 1920s.
And I understand that he's not sparing any expense. Unlimited budget. Is that...
Well, that was funny. There was a funny little exchange when he sort of said, you have an unlimited budget. And then he said, did I tell you that you do have to watch your pennies? And Hans said, no, you didn't, but Ivanka did.
Ivanka. Yeah. She's in charge of the cash.
Yeah.
Let's go with Gil Hance on the Olympic golf course. Surprise. A pick, but everybody seems to like it.
Well, you know, it's a surprise only in the sense that there were some big names in there. You know, Greg Norman and Lorraine Ochoa were partnering. Jack Nicklaus and Annika Sorenstam were in there. We had Robert Trent Jones Jr.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, over the last 5 or 6 years, Gil Hance has been one of the hottest architects around. I've played several of his courses, Boston Golf Club, which is just spectacular. He did a renovation of Sleepy Hollow, a great old classic course in New York, and he gets a lot of credit for being in the tradition of the old masters. He doesn't trick golf courses up. He provides options to holes. He's from that school of thought that believes that a great golf hole forces you to make decisions. You can't just stand there and swing your butt off with a driver. You know, you have to think about where you want to be, what angle you want to be coming in with your second shot.
Okay.
So a lot of people were really happy that they went with somebody who's a traditionalist that way.
So you, Bubba Watson won't be able to just go Bubba it.
No.
Okay.
You know, a bomb and gouge golf doesn't really work on a Gil Hance golf course.
Also, when they mention that it's on the, it's kind of along the coast, this piece of property that he's going to make into a golf course.
Yeah.
Is the sand, like the sand belt in Australia, like maybe the Melbourne sand belt?
Yeah, I don't know what the soil is like there, if it's quite as spectacular as that.
Okay.
They were supposed to make this announcement in February, and I was at the USGA annual meeting in like February 4th, something like that, and I was told, oh, the announcement's going to be made tomorrow, and then they changed their mind. And apparently, the reason I started poking into it, the reason they changed their mind was this week, the International Olympic Committee was paying a site visit to Rio for the 2016 Games. And basically, there's not a whole lot of good news to tell. They're like way behind in the construction of things. So they wanted to save the golf course announcement as a bit of good news that they could share with the public.
Oh, yes. Very good. Nicely done. Speaking of nicely done, the trilogy Vision 54, Every Shot Has a Purpose, Game Before the Game, and Play Your Best Golf Now, the third of the three. You started with Every Shot Has a Purpose, and it was very, it's one of those books where you read it and you say, well, this is how I can apply this applies to my life. This is every day. This isn't just golf. This is, well, I can't really put it any better than, they believe it's possible to shoot a 54, making a birdie on every hole. That's why it's called Vision 54, if it's a 72-hole course, right? If you have the right mindset and well-honed intuitive power. And using your mind in intuitively and keeping your body understanding that it reacts to emotions, Vision 54 sort of brings everything to the table that a lot of people didn't. They were very physically, mechanically inclined to teach you how to use the swing. But that changed with Lynn and Pia, didn't it?
Yeah. Pia Nilsson and Lynn Marriott believe that there's more than one right way to swing a golf club. And the key to scoring well is to be able to repeat your golf swing. And so what they've done is become coaches who teach you how to increase the chances that you can repeat your golf swing. Look, we've all hit good golf shots with the golf swings that we have. We've all hit great golf shots with the golf swing we have. It's just a question of we don't make that same swing every time. So a lot of it, you know, they say, you know, you're not a golfer who happens to be a person. You're a person who happens to be a golfer. So they really say you've got to understand yourself. You got to understand your emotions. You got to understand what works for you. And they're big believers that what you achieve is limited in large part by what you believe you can achieve. And if you increase your belief system, the results will be better.
When I was reading your book, one of them, and I'm not sure which one it is, you're taking a class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a three-day class.
Yep.
And you're sitting and you're talking about fear and how that kind of gets in the way of what you're doing. Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, you know, it's one of the great things about their school is two things that I really like about it is, one, they believe that where you really learn the game is on the golf course, not on the practice range. So every day we would play nine holes of golf and go out and practice out there. The other thing is we sat around and we talked a fair amount. And that really helped the whole mental process. And in the concept of fear and in dealing with that, it's important to know that fear is something that everybody has. And, I think one of the stories that I tell in Every Shot Must Have a Purpose is a friend of mine who's a concert pianist, and I asked him, have you ever gotten to the point where you're not nervous playing? And he said, no, but I've gotten to the point where I'm comfortable feeling nervous. You know, that he views that nervous feeling as an old friend coming to visit, and he uses it as motivation. And that's what they try to say about golf, that when you're out there, you can't try to deny that you have emotions. You just have to learn to be comfortable with the emotions you have.
Yeah, when you're terrified about to go on the air, what to do with that? Yeah, I understand that. In Game Before the Game, that's really all about getting yourself physically, like, warmed up into the rhythm?
Well, practice is you know, again, like every shot must have a purpose. Practice should have a purpose. A lot of people go to the practice range and they hit balls for an hour and they think that they've practiced. And all they've done is hit balls for an hour. You know, you got to have a plan when you're out there practicing. Pia and Lynn are big believers. Practice a shorter amount of time. Practice 30 minutes, but have an idea what you're doing, what you're working on today. What are you trying to get out of this practice session? They bring the whole concept of return on investment. What kind of return on investment are you getting for the time that you put into practice? A lot of people go out there and they hit balls till their hands bleed and all they've got is bloody hands. They haven't learned anything.
Got it. Play Your Best Golf Now, the most recent. That covers a lot of the different skills. They give you different drills to do. And I was looking at one in particular, a topper. Just any name, put it in there, has become an angry player, wasn't even aware of it. That led him to becoming an unhappy player. And there's no way you can play your best golf in that state. When he realized this and learned some of our tools to maintain his emotional balance, he dropped his handicap to 0.2 and says, my ambition is to get it lower still. So understanding again how, you know, angry and unhappy and you can't play well if you're in any of those. You have to get to know yourself. Then they give you balance exercises and how to achieve balance, I suppose, emotionally as well as physically.
Well, you know, one of the things that they say, and again, this is about getting the most out of your practice and getting your most out of your game, is if you could only practice one thing, what's the one thing you could do that would help you improve your game? I think it was Topper where he said that he just 90% of his practice now is just short game, you know, because that's a place where he can knock strokes off his score. For me, I do their balance exercises a lot, and when I'm warming up, I do the some of the drills where I hit shots standing on one foot, I hit shots one-handed. When I get in trouble with my golf swing, it's getting to the top and then trying to go for that other gear and overreaching. So when I'm warming up, and this is another great line that they use, you shouldn't try to be getting too much out of warming up except warming up, because don't make it be like you're cramming for a test and all of a sudden you're going to learn something out there. You're not, you know, if you're warming up before a match. So when I'm warming up before a round, I work on balance because that's where I can get my best return on investment.
Excellent. As always, enjoyable. Thank you so much for being on the show. Play your best golf now, game before the game, and every shot has a purpose. Ron Cyrak, it's good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Danielle.
We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
So I was sitting in my office feeling the heat of the day through my window, even with the AC blasting, when my architect walked in. And I asked, what do you recommend?
Well, we had Pacific Room Glass Tinting do the building next door.
He said they reduced the room temperature by 10 degrees. The hospital saved 16% on their electric bill. My recommendation, Pacific Room Glass Tinting. Commercial buildings, residential, or hotels, your premier authorized 3M film dealer. For a free estimate, call 263-9885. Pacific Rim Glass Tinting.
Do you know a child that is interested in golf but you don't know where to start? The Hawaii State Junior Golf Association and the Aloha Section PGA are proud to present Hawaii Junior Golf Day on March 10th at courses statewide. Join this free, fun-filled day for children to learn the basics of golf. This is your chance to learn how simple it is to get a child started. Make it a family day. Hawaii Junior Golf Day, March 10th. Visit hsjga.org to learn more.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Come share our home where the Grand Slam was played. Robert Trent Jones Jr. saw the mountains and felt the sea. Sure, great vistas and greens most people only dream of. Take the day off or do business with a bunch of your best customers. Come join the fun and the aloha at Hoipu Bay. Call us for your tee time, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay.
Off a tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on The Golf Club.
Do you remember the movie in which Sean Connery asked Kevin Costner in the end? It was The Untouchables, okay. What are you prepared to do? He was going to have to go down and get Al Capone, take him down. What are you prepared to do? Because if you're going to do that, you better be ready to have to go to the absolute limit. Be prepared to do everything to accomplish your goal. What are you prepared to do? That's the first thing I thought of when I looked at Dane Gingrich's Coach Your Mind. And he says, you know, it's one thing, there are lots of different ways of preparing. You can take a class, you can buy a book, you can go and hit balls for hours. But if you're not willing to put the time in, hit those shots with a reason, have a purpose for practicing. If you're not willing to not just read the book, but put the book into practice every day, if you're not willing to really work on what it is you want to accomplish, you're not going to get anywhere. Welcome to the show, Dane Gingrich.
Thank you, Danielle. How you doing?
Excellent. Excellent. So that's what I thought of when I looked at, do you want to become the 1%? What does that mean?
What? 1%? Well, I labeled it the 1% because I wanted to make that separation you were just talking about, I wanted to make it tangible for people instead of just thinking be better or be as good as you can. Or I wanted players to see, look, majority of people are doing it this way. The greats, the elite of the elite, are doing it this way. So how can we make that tangible? And it just popped into my head, and 1% are doing whatever it takes, as you said, and the 99% say they want it. Many think they're doing enough, but tend to just settle for less. 1% is simply just a mindset. Like, in making a decision that no matter what, I'm going to wake up at 5:30 if I know my opponents are waking up at 6. If I sleep in and they wake up, I lose. And that is the 1%. It's simply a decision that you make that nothing will stop you. Nothing. Period.
Okay, when I was reading Make the Choice, choose your actions, choose your emotions, choose your confidence levels, choose your commitment levels, choose what you will accomplish today. Make the choice. All right, the idea of choosing your reactions and choosing your emotions, it's easy to read that, but when you actually have to do that, when you're in the heat of the moment, to choose your emotions and your reactions.
The emotions and the reactions are results of what you're thinking. So I look at, I'm stuck behind a bunker and I have to hit a flop shot to a short pin. I have a reaction. I have a way of thinking. I can think, God dang it, I bring in bogey, and that creates that emotion of negativity, that brings that emotion of, so I'm choosing that emotion by what I think. Or I can look at that bunker shot and say, what a great opportunity to get up and down. What an unbelievable, and that creates, I'm choosing the emotion of power, period.
Yes.
By what I view that situation. See, 1%, it's just how you perceive the moment, period. Do you perceive it as, you know, with fear, or do you perceive it with an opportunity to overcome? I had a playing session yesterday, and after number two, he double bogeyed, and I was getting prepared to kind of console him, come over there and do the whole, hey, let's get on to the next hole. And before I could say anything, he said, what a great opportunity. I said, what are you talking? So I just double bogeyed. What an incredible opportunity to get it back right now. I thought, there it is. And I tweeted about it immediately. That's 1%.
Okay. Now, to get it back. But isn't that dangerous, though, when you're thinking about recovering from something?
But it's an emotional response. We're emotional, you know, as Ron was just saying. No matter what we do, we're emotional creatures. And that emotional response of the double bogey is either going to be, son of a.
Okay.
I can't believe I did that. Or you turn it around and start focusing on that confident and powerful emotion of not necessarily how to get it back, but that you will get it back.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Not the how, because the how will get you in trouble.
Right.
But that you will, and then you have the confidence level, because with confidence comes accomplishment, like putting.
That's right. He made a decision that no matter what, he was not going to get upset and not going to quit, not going to think about his score, just doubled after two now. He just made a decision. He will, somewhere in this round, get it back. And he kind of embraced, he loved that opportunity to get it back. That's the point. He didn't sulk. He didn't bring it to the third tee. He just made a decision right there that it was not going to stop him. And 99% look at that double bogey and instantly focus on, oh my gosh, I'm already two over after. You know what I mean? I mean, it was just simply a decision he made.
Okay. That takes us to the next. You can see this at coachyourmind.com. The next paragraph. You have the choice to pre-accept all outcomes.
Right.
Now, to me, that makes the most sense, because if I pre-accept all outcomes, I won't become emotionally distraught at whatever comes at me, because my expectation isn't attached to it.
This is the key here. This right here is the golden nugget. Most players don't pre-accept good and bad outcomes. They don't accept the bad outcomes. They go through their process, they visualize, they see the shot, but they haven't accepted result A, B, or C. And we cannot commit or trust. You hear it all the time. Just commit. Just trust. We cannot fully commit or trust if we're not accepting of the result. It's absolutely impossible. Again, it's just like people ask me, how do I accept? Well, how did you forgive somebody? What do you do when you just forgive somebody? That's essentially kind of what you're doing pre-shot. You're not expecting to miss, but how do you forgive? You just make a decision to simply let it go. So when you're behind the ball and before shot, you're just pre-accepting anything possible. I don't expect to miss, but if I do, I just move on and I go. And it takes the negative emotional response post-shot totally out of play. It does take a ton of practice. I mean, this isn't just here, give me a pill and I learn how to do this. This is every single shot. And that's, you know, that, I mean, that's what the 1% is all about. It's more than just on the course. It's a way of, you know, I talk about it all the time. It's not a technique, Danielle. It's not just a technique. It's a way of thinking, being, the way of living every minute. When they think safe, when they think backup plans, you only think, I will achieve this, period. No backup plan. No what if. I'm going to get it done. End of story.
Okay. There's a dichotomy there. There's a dichotomy in what you say, because I'm supposed to accept the outcomes, but at the same time, I'm supposed to say that I'm going to achieve. You see that there are two messages there. So it's important, I think, that people understand. I think what you're saying is that you always have to be striving for excellence, and within that, understanding that it's not always going to come to you immediately.
That's right. That doesn't mean you stop. That doesn't mean, okay, I didn't get it, so I accept it and I quit. No, you just accept it as it's just part of the journey. It's just part of the process, and then I find a bigger and better way. I've already accepted I'm going to make mistakes, period. If you don't accept that you're going to make mistakes, you just drive yourself crazy on and off the golf course, period. You know, and it tends to, when you do pre-accept, it instantly relaxes you. It instantly just calms you. And ironically, counterintuitively, really, you end up hitting better shots anyway. You end up doing better in the long run when you accept, because it relaxes.
I like that. There's nothing quite like the feeling of total contentment and peace during
right.
what most people would describe as pressure moments.
Right, right. And why do we feel those moments? Because we're so focused on outcome and score versus our routine versus our process and accepting whatever happens. And that, again, that takes a ton of practice. It's not something that you just do. It's, like I said, it's all day, every day you work on this on and off the golf course.
Okay, somebody that you have online, you put a clip from P. Diddy, of all people, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right, I know.
It's yeah. Like, what, P. Diddy? But
yeah.
when you listen to what he says, I've been working since I was 12 years old. You
right.
think this is easy for me to accomplish?
Right.
I don't stop working. I'm not where I am today, wealth-wise, if that's what you're going to attribute success to. I'm not where I am today because I, you know, just happened upon all this money. It's because I don't ever stop working towards it, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
P. Diddy wasn't about, you know, I didn't post him because he just strictly, and love him or hate him, whatever, he is the definition of 1%. Your motivation doesn't have to be money and fame and glory and all that stuff. But he is just the definition of, I'm going to work harder than you. Done, and if I do, I cannot lose. And I just came across it and looked at it and said, bingo, that's it.
No, and I agree with you. I think it's
yeah.
a perfect example of
right.
if you're going to be successful, if you are going to achieve what you want to achieve, then you have to put 100% of yourself into it. By the way, there's no 110%. I find that...
Actually, there's only 1%.
Yeah, there's 1%. But okay, fine. But, you know, people say I'm going to put 110% in this. I'm like,
right.
where are you going to get the 10%? You are only 100%, okay?
Right,
you,
right.
So you can only give 100%. That's all you've got to give. Huh.
It's just, you've got to love that battle within yourself. You know, and it's, you know, if you're an athlete, then, you know, you're a golfer. You love the battle between you, the course, and your opponent. You kind of love it. I posted... And I'm not sure if you saw the Will Smith video. I watched his video every single day. He talks about just making a decision, and that's all, just decide. And he talks about, look, if I'm on a treadmill next to you, if you and I are running on a treadmill, two things will happen. Either you will quit first, or I will die. And that's it. He will never quit. He will never stop. He will either die, or his opponent will quit. And that's 1%. That's it. You just decide that nothing will stop you. No, naysayers can't stop you. The 99% will stop. They'll quit. They'll play it safe. You cannot. Period. Done. Make a decision.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty simple, isn't it? You're either content to be mediocre and just continue, or you're content to accept. This is, I think, what's most important in golf. With this philosophy, you're going to say, okay, this is what I can achieve giving this much of myself, giving this much time to practice. This will be the result. And I'm not going to expect anything more of myself.
Right.
But if I want to be a professional golfer, and if I want to be at, then I have to assess my strengths and weaknesses. And I have to say, okay, physically, I'm physically incapable. So I'm going to accept that, but I'm going to make myself the best physically that I can be. But I'm probably not going to be on the PGA Tour, you know, for whatever reason. I'm not just, there are special people who play this game. Am I wrong?
No, there. I mean, you've got to have the talent, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but 1% isn't just about professional. It's really not about the result. It's about the mindset to the result. You don't have to be professional. You can be 12 years old and be a 12, and we're attempting to turn you into better than a 12. It's the mindset within the walk. That's the 1%. You don't have to be a professional or anything. You just have to be willing to never stop at whatever you decide you want to do. And, you know, you say it's simple, and in theory, yes, it's simple. But in real-life application, it is brutal because, I mean, it's 1% for a reason. Not many people will keep going when they hit that wall or when they hit that second and third wall.
Okay, you mean know? When I want to sleep because I've only had 4 hours? That kind of wall?
That's a tough wall, Miss 4-Hour Sleeper.
Yeah, I know it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do it all the time.
Right.
No, but I know what you mean. It's like, are you willing to be uncomfortable and strive for something knowing that you'll, I mean, I don't know how to put it, knowing that you'll accomplish your goals?
I mean, you've got to be, I talk about it all the time, you've got to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. We just don't want to be uncomfortable, whether it's on the course or we just don't want to feel uncomfortable. But that, learning how to be uncomfortable creates a bigger comfort zone, you know, and it's just instinctively, you know, we hear it all the time. We hear safety. We just be comfortable. It's just instinctively, you know, counterintuitive to be uncomfortable.
Learning how to be uncomfortable.
You've got to love those moments. You've got to love them. You have to love those.
That's it, isn't it? Coach your mind. Dane Gingrich, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Is there a message you'd like to deliver right now at like 30 seconds before we go to our break? I'm sorry, or a minute. I'll give you 60 seconds. How's that?
He's going to give me 60 seconds. My biggest thing, if I could say, you know, in a sentence or two, whatever you want, you just make a decision that you will, the capital will, achieve it, and don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it, period.
That's right.
You just make a decision that it's going to happen. And then how it happens will just kind of take shape. But you've got to decide right this minute that you want it more than anything you've ever wanted, ever. And if that means sleeping 1 hour less to work harder, then you do it. You do whatever it takes to get it, 1%.
So do you want strength training for the mental game? Coach your mind? Dane Gingrich. This is the man, coachyourmind.com. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Danielle.
We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club. Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family. Invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box and see that view, you'll know why Poipu Bay makes any day special. Come join the Aloha. Visit our pro shop and take home a memory at Poipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting. Star Protection Agency, providing security across Hawaii since 1991. Licensed and bonded.
Property Guard and Patrol Services. Loss Prevention. Star Protection provides the security you need with the industry-leading internet-based reporting system. One call does it all. 532-3911 or on the web at starprotectionagency.com. Star Protection, locally owned with people you trust.
Our company has been in business more than 30 years, and we depend on Alakai Mechanical for everything. They maintain our air conditioners, sheet metal on our new roof. They just installed our new commercial kitchen. Doesn't matter if you're big business, or condo, or mom and pop store. If you want your job done on time, on budget, done right, do what we do. Call Alakai Mechanical across Hawaii. The best minds in air conditioning, plumbing, and sheet metal, that's Alakai Mechanical.
It's the Golf Club. Visit our website at www.radiogolfclub.com. You can hear previous archived shows. Just hit the listen button and pick the show you want to hear. Email Danielle with your thoughts and requests. Contact us about advertising and check out our sponsor links. That's www.radiogolfclub.com. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club.
Welcome back. Maybe you'd like to play a round of golf today. Just go play and have fun at Makalei. There's a tee time at 10:20 and on 11:40. Volcano was 58 degrees this morning. Lovely. 10:18 and 10:58 on Kauai, where the AM Tour. May you all hit the sweet spot every time. Going out at 8:40, 9:20, 10:30. Those are tee times available for you. 8:40, 9:20 and 10:30. Ko'olina on Oahu has an 8:32, a 9:52, and a 10. I'll make that a 12:48. The Elks, you all have fun today too. Royal Hawaiian Country Club, there's a 9:40 and 11 o'clock. And at McKenna, there's an 8:48, a 9:04, and a 10:32, and the bottoms are going out. And I can't help but say, I hope you'll find your tops. All right, we're going to meet a gentleman. And he really bowls me over. All right, his name is Augie Hess. And I get to say that Augie Hess is 97 years old. Yeah, no, he's 97 years young. Welcome to the Golf Club, Augie Hess. Are you there, Augie?
Yes, I'm listening.
Oh, good. It's so good to have you on the show. I understand that you grew up with a horse and buggy.
Area, yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Do you remember when the Model T and the Model A came out?
I sure do.
That must have been something with watching those horses just...
Yeah, I remember the buggy days, yeah, horse and buggies and the Model T. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When did you get into golf?
Well, I got into golf when I was 48 years old. Pretty old.
Yeah. Why did you decide to take up the game?
Well, it's a long story, but I maybe you can shorten it a little bit. I had a gas station, and a fellow came into this gas station with a set of McGregor clubs, and he didn't have no gas for his automobile, so he asked if he could get some gas and, you know, trade for these golf clubs. I says, okay, but then I didn't know what I was going to do with the clubs. I didn't know nothing about golf. And anyway, I got those golf clubs, and I went down on a field close by my station there and started hitting the golf balls here and there and so forth. And finally, I found a nice field there, and I started hitting the golf balls a little better, and I started marking a different distance for different clubs. And that's how I got started.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, see, I've been talking about this all morning long, about having a purpose in when you go practice, and you were marking distance for the different clubs?
Yes. Then I finally added, you know, a driver and a fairway and so forth. Then I'd mark it off, yeah, 100 yards, 150, then 175 and 200. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On the field. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then this field belonged to the sheep herders, and every time the grass grew up pretty high, they run the sheep over and cut it right down. They're real nice for, you know, just a range.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'd like to be there right now, actually. You know, the video I saw of you when you were hitting balls and on the putting green.
Oh, yeah.
You have such a light touch with the putter. Where did you learn that?
Well, just practicing on the, just to practice around on the golf, you know, on the putting range. And,
wow.
Well, I don't know. I didn't practice too much, really, but I do practice before the game, you know, on the putting greens and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Get ready for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you like most about the game of golf?
Well, what I like about it is it keeps me in good health. You know, I do a lot of exercise. You're playing golf, you know. And what I like about golf is when you hit one good one and it sails in the air, then hits the green. That's one beautiful part of the golf. As far as golfing goes, I play a lot of golf. That keeps me healthy. And when I don't play golf, the days I don't play golf, I do a little walking. Then I have some machines, a couple of machines at home that I use, you know, just to keep in shape.
So is that how, that was one of my questions. How do you stay so young physically and mentally?
Well, mentally, I belong to the Masons organization and also the Eastern Star. And both organizations, I have to do a lot of memorizing. And that keeps my mental pretty well inactive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I hadn't really thought about that. Memorization would be good for my brain. I'll have to remember that, Augie.
Yeah, Masons is a big organization. It's all over the world. And, of course, the Eastern Star belongs to the Mason also. But anyway, I have to do a lot of memorizing there, and I'm sure that keeps my mental part going good. Mm-hmm.
Do you like watching professional golf on television?
I watch it all the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
When I can, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who's your favorite player?
Right now, I like Mickelson, but he's not doing real good, but I like him. I think he's my favorite. Mm-hmm. Right now.
Phil won the ATT Pebble Beach, so that must have been a good weekend.
What's that?
When Phil won the AT&T Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
That was just recently. That was a good weekend for Phil. We're hoping he has another better weekend soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so how many holes in one have you had?
I've had two. Mm-hmm. One in Boise, Idaho, and one down in Phoenix. Uh-huh.
Now, I
never did get one here in Bishop. I play here all the time, but I did get one, a hole in one here, but it was on a temporary green, and they didn't count that.
Uh-huh. That confused me. What is a temporary green?
Well, in the wintertime here, it freezes a little bit, and they won't let you play on the regular greens, you know, and they mark off another temporary alongside of it, so you can use that for, you know.
Gotcha.
And that's what we call a temporary green.
Yeah, it just seems such a shame that, you know, that they would take it away from you after having accomplished a hole-in-one.
Yeah, that's one of the game. That's part of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I like your keeping it under 90. Let's see, you're 97. What did you shoot yesterday?
I shot a 90 yesterday.
And did you get depressed about that? Somebody told me you got depressed because you shot a 90, and I couldn't believe it because that's such a good score.
I shot 90 yesterday, and that's my goal, is to shoot 90 or under.
That was my last question. What goal do you still have? I mean, you've got to have goals in life, and what are your goals?
What are my goals?
Yes.
Well, my goal is to keep playing golf as long as I can, you know. And I like to be playing the game when I reach 100 years old. I don't know if that's going to be possible, but right now, as far as I'm concerned, my health is still good, so I might make it.
I think you're going to make it.
I live alone and drive my own car all the time.
I think you're going to make it, Augie. And I hope, Mr. Hess, that I'm as mentally and physically together as you are when I'm 97.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Well, you want to, that's going to be it?
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Can I say one more thing?
Oh, absolutely, sir.
My name is Augie Hess, and I'm at the Bishop Country Club, Bishop, California, in the heart of the beautiful Owens Valley. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, one more thing.
Sure.
One more thing. I have a tournament in my honor every year, or once a year here. My birthday, that's in October.
Okay.
And the club here puts on a tournament for me, and it's quite a deal. We play golf, and they have a big dinner afterwards and give out the trophies and so forth. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun.
It's on your birthday. When's your birthday?
October the 25th.
On the 25th of October. And where's the club? What club are you going to... is the tournament held at?
What's that?
Which golf course? Golf club is the tournament?
We only have one here in Bishop. That's the Bishop Country Club.
Okay. All right.
If you're ever around here, you're invited to come here.
I would love to. That's why I'm putting the date down. It's within... I can leave Hawaii. My job allows me to leave the islands in October, so that I could be there.
I've been to Hawaii twice now, playing Plantation, the Plantation course.
Yeah.
I played that twice. Mm-hmm.
You have to be strong to... Did you walk the course, too?
No, we drove
the carts?
That was about 5 or 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I got a birdie in eighth hole, I think. I think it's the 17th hole. I got a birdie. Mm-hmm. That's the only good thing I did there.
That's great to me.
Very tough course.
It is a tough course.
Yeah. Okay.
Augie Hess, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for inviting me on.
Absolutely. I look forward to October 25th, your birthday.
It's 25th.
Yeah, got it. October 25th.
Mm-hmm. 1914, I was born.
Excellent. Thanks for being on the show, Augie. Aloha. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Danielle Tucker, when we return to the Golf Club.
Your AC runs year-round in Hawaii. Whether you're in office, store, building, or shopping center, your AC on the fritz can ruin your day and stop your business. Alakai Mechanical does it all, from AC sales to maintaining your AC, so it runs better and lasts longer. Alakai world-class professionals are using only the best parts to keep you cool. Protect your investment, from window system to cooling towers across Hawaii. Call Alakai Mechanical, keeping you cool.
So I was sitting in my office, feeling the heat of the day through my window, even with the AC blasting, when my architect walked in. And I asked, what do you recommend?
Well, we had Pacific Room Glass Tinting do the building next door.
He said they reduced the room temperature by 10 degrees. The hospital saved 16% on their electric bill. My recommendation? Pacific Room Glass Tinting. Commercial buildings, residential, or hotels, your premier authorized 3M film dealer. For a free estimate, call 263-9885. Pacific Rim Glass Tinting.
Do you know a child that is interested in golf but you don't know where to start? The Hawaii State Junior Golf Association and the Aloha Section PGA are proud to present Hawaii Junior Golf Day on March 10th at courses statewide. Join this free, fun-filled day for children to learn the basics of golf. This is your chance to learn how simple it is to get a child started. Make it a family day. Hawaii Junior Golf Day, March 10th. Visit hsjga.org to learn more.
Yeah, yeah. A mongoose stole my ball. What's the rule on that?
Let's get back into the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
Welcome back. I get to talk with all of my favorite people today. Peter Alice will soon be in the World Golf Hall of Fame. He is a BBC commentator, of course. He has been a professional golfer. He is an author. He's a golf course architect. He has many things, and right now he is a guest on my show, and I'm very honored to welcome Peter Alice to the Golf Club. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Danielle. You're in good form. That gentleman was flirting with you. And at 97, I think it's wonderful. He must have some magic pills. I must get older.
Isn't that amazing?
He sounded lovely.
Yes, and he shot a 90, you know, and he was a little upset about it, according to a friend of mine. And I thought, my goodness, I'm happy if I can shoot 90. I don't get enough practice to expect much more from myself. But I'm so thrilled that you have been elected to the World Golf Hall of Fame. I was rooting for you, and I called your office as soon as I heard that you had been elected, and I said, Mr. Alice has been elected to the Hall of Fame. Yes! Can't think of anyone more deserving, sir. You have done so many different things in life, including your books and your writing and your speaking. I would love to be at one of your evenings with Alice. Are you going to have any more in the future? I think the last one wrapped up.
Well, I've done 81 over the last two winters, and we finished on the 14th of February this year, and they've asked me to do a few more, but Britain is such a small place, really, that I don't really want to go within 50 miles of where I've been before, because I'm not quite as confident as some people think I might be, and I'd hate people to come along and say, oh, I've heard that story before. Rather like comedians telling the same joke. That's why I have great sympathy with comedians. But I'm going to do about 22 or 3, starting in September, and finish early November, I suppose. They're great fun. I do 2 hours of 45 minutes, and the first half I tell them about my family and my father and Ryder Cups and World Cups and tournament victories and bits and pieces of the family. And the second half is the audience participation, which is great fun. You get a great collection of questions. They're always different, and there's a bit of humor. It's great fun. I enjoy it.
What kinds of questions do people ask you most frequently?
Oh, is modern equipment spoiling the game? Is there too much money in golf now? Will Tiger Woods ever break 80 again? And who's going to win the next Ryder Cup? And our golf course is getting too long, and you know that sort of thing.
Well,
they have bits and pieces. They always ask. They always ask if I had one more four ball to play, who would my fellow three players be?
Okay.
And sometimes I'm serious, and other times I say, my father. I'd like to have played with my father because he was one of the great players. And I never really had an opportunity of playing with him. So I say, well, my father and Bobby Jones, perhaps, because he was a friend of my father's, and Halle Berry. And then I say, I'd ask Tiger Woods to caddy for me just to make him jealous.
Well, the question then we have to ask is Tiger Woods. Is he ever going to be Tiger Woods as we've known him again?
Well, I don't know about that, but I've just been watching him now. He's on in the UK playing in this tournament on the Blue Monster in Florida, and he looks to be coming back to form. I just wish he was a little bit more gracious. He's just so miserable, and he seemingly does nothing to make people like him or love him or adore him. And I remember when I played many years ago with Arnold Palmer, and the crowd were obviously greatly on his side. And I remarked on that, and he said, the game is so much easier when people like you and want you to do well. And Tiger doesn't seem to bother about that. He's not good at interviews. He's not smiley-faced. It's been a privilege to see him play. But I think sometimes he's a pain in the neck.
I think you're absolutely right. And he really would do himself a world of good if he would just smile occasionally.
Well, just get people to say, that's better. He did a bit more human.
Yes, and he did that a couple of times recently in interviews. He actually talked about his children and how they were going to come and see him. Daddy, you know, Daddy, are you going to be on television? And well, if I play good, I will be. And then, well, then, Daddy, please play good. He told that story. Yeah, and it made him human.
That's what he needs to do more of.
Exactly my thinking. Now, on courses, you're a golf course architect. Are the courses too long?
Well, I don't think you can change. Golf has been played for 400 or 500 years, and I don't think the game and the courses should necessarily be changed for the 2,000 or 3,000 people who play it at the very highest level, whether they be professionals, or men, women, amateurs. So unless you start building golf courses solely for big tournaments and nobody else plays on them, or you change the equipment, which they don't seem as in a hurry to do. They make the balls go a shorter distance. I don't know. I would just leave it alone, personally. I'd get rid of the belly putters. I don't like them.
Really?
Everything has improved so dramatically. Motor car racing, the cars go 80, 100 miles faster than they did 70 years ago. Everything improves. And I'd like to abolish par. Who the hell cares about par? you come and you do the lowest score and you win. Oh, they've 20 under par. They've ruined my course. Oh, tales of woe, tales of woe. What the hell does it matter? Somebody comes, they all play, and he's done the lowest score, and they've won.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, let's go back to the long putter. Do you want to get rid of the long putter completely, or just anchoring it?
Well, it's a very moot point. You can. There have been long putters. Since I was a boy, people had putters that were a bit longer than us. I think anchor it. I don't think you should anchor it. And I don't think you should use it for two club length if you've got to pick away from a bush. I don't think you should use that because in the history of the game, the putter has always been the shortest club in the bag. So I think it's not in the spirit of the game.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So just not even holding it up. And certainly not for professionals, the ones who are playing at the highest level.
No, that's all part of it. You've got, like, caddies lining up the player. It's all part of the game. You do it yourself. And that's what makes somebody a better player than somebody else, because you can line up better. You've learned to hit it in the right direction. You've learned to put the ball in the right position. You've learned how to read the line on a green. And you do it. And I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah. How about the equipment changes? Do you enjoy the new clubs that they've come out with that make it so easy to hit it straight and long?
Well, I don't know about whether it is the big heads of clubs. They're all right. But you see, people forget when I played, my 5-iron is today's 7-iron. They've made the clubs much stronger. They don't tell you that. But they're several degrees stronger. So when they say, oh, he hit it on the green with a 7. It's impossible to hit a drive and a 7-iron onto a par 5 of 550 yards. It's a normal 7-iron, unless you've got a gale behind. So you just tweak them. You know, one day there'll be every iron will be a 2-iron, but with the way they're going.
Okay, all right. May I ask what clubs you use?
Oh, I used Slazengers for years when I played, and now I've got a set of Mizuno.
Mizuno. Oh, those are nice. Yep. Nice.
Nice club.
Yeah, very nice clubs. Now, on the Gil Hands decision, were you happy with the decision, the 2016 Olympic Games golf course that's going to be built in Brazil?
Sorry, say again.
You know, Gil Hands won the bid to build the...
Oh, yes. I've not heard of him. He's a name... Not familiar to me.
Ah, okay. Who were you rooting for, so to speak?
Well, I there are so many architects that have been going for years and years and years, and well established and famous. You know, from I was brought up at the time with Henry Cotton and James Braid and all these people, Harry Colt, and then they came through. We got Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, and all that lot. There's dozens of them now, Peter Thompson and so on. But I hope he'd better. I'm very fond of Brazil, and I hope he makes a nice course of it.
I wanted to ask.
Well.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. You won the 1961 Brazil Open.
I did, yes, in Rio, yes.
Did you spend a lot of time there?
Well, I had a great friend there called Seymour Marvin, who was a businessman there, and I used to go. I went about a dozen times to Brazil and played on a number of occasions there and in São Paulo, and it's a magnificent country, and it's getting better again.
Do you think that the Olympic Games will actually make golf more popular around the world?
Well, that's what people think, and I would not have voted for it myself. because I think we've only got 52 weeks in the year. There's almost too much golf played at the moment. You've got to find another week. You've got to select the team. Who is going to play? Is it going to be amateurs? Is it going to be the top players? I remember when they first, I think, put basketball into the games, and the Harlem Go Globetrotters went along. And everyone thought, oh, that's unfair, because it was an amateur sport, and they were marvelous professionals and played for fun. I would not have voted for it, no, but they say that the Olympic Games will make huge differences in some countries, like India. The moment they were not particularly interested in golf, but anything that's sponsored or helped or encouraged by the Olympic Committee get lots of aid in money. And so now they're putting lots of money into building new courses in India and encouraging young people, boys and girls, to play, which is a good thing.
Well, let's hope it works out that way. That's certainly what they would like. You know, I mean, golf needs, it seems to need an infusion of cash from the regular people who play the game. We've got a lot of attention on the professionals. We talk about them all the time, but we don't seem to be following up with having people actually go play, at least not in the United States. How is it going in Great Britain?
Oh, I think many golf clubs here are going through a slack period. The economy is not very good, and people, youngish people with young families, the first thing that goes is their membership to the club. You know, it's the gymnasium or the golf club, and less people are playing now. But we'll probably come through that in a year or two. But, you know, it's nice when young people play, but not everybody has to be a great champion. You play for fun. Unfortunately, a lot of young people copy the professionals, who take so long. It's painful. I watched this young lad, Keegan Bradley, good player, but he just fiddles around, so, oh, God, it's painful. And there's about 20 of them like that now, and it just gets worse and worse and worse.
We talk about the pace of play all the time and what to do about the pace of play. What would you do? Would you put
nobody's done anything. They've talked about it. They've talked about it for 30 years.
Right.
They've not brought up. They've not made the pet. They bring in penalties and they have timings, but nobody ever does anything about it. It's like John McEnroe when he played tennis and was a nasty bit of work on the court. Nobody banned him because he got people into the arena to see him play. So he was a commercial success for the sponsors. And that's a fact of life. But it's, and that's the same with all the way through golf. The youngsters watch the people play. They take the glove off their hand and put it in their back pocket to knock in a putt of 3 inches. they mark the ball and put the name of the ball in line with where they want to hit. Oh, God, it's pathetic.
So would you find them? Would you find them?
No, that's no good. Finding them's no good. They've got plenty of money.
Okay.
And you'd have to make a sensible time. I remember Jack Nicklaus, a dear friend of mine. He, I don't know, was it 40 years ago or more? He was a slow player when he started, and they all complained. And he said, "Well, you just give me a 2-shot penalty because I can't play any quicker." And so it all fell by the wayside. But it won't change until the players have a meeting and they decide enough is enough and we must play quicker. And then it might happen then. But I think we used to, when I was playing, there was a great South African called Bobby Locke. We played in singles, two balls. The spectators were allowed on the fairways. He always had the biggest gallery, so he had to get from the tee to play a second shot, then onto the green, then off the green, through the crowds. And nobody wanted to play with Bobby because 18 holes took 2 hours and 50 minutes. And nobody wanted to play with him. Now, if two balls go around in 2 hours and 50 minutes, they think that the players must be related to Olympic sprint champions.
I love how you speak. All right. You've written a great book. It's called The Cure for a Grumpy Old Man. Golf.
Oh, golf. The Cure for a Grumpy Old Man.
Yes. Yes. In the book, Golf, The Cure for a Grumpy Old Man, you talk about how it's the perfect antidote for middle-aged discontent. Can you explain
that? It helps. It helps if you've got an understanding wife or boyfriend or whatever your preference. It's something you can do. Like the gentleman you were talking to is 98 years old or whatever. He's still enjoying life. He's obviously got all his marbles, and he can get around on a golf cart or whatever. You can't do that with squash and tennis, and golf clubs are havens for people who are, widowed or widowers, and you always find someone to talk to and have a cup of coffee. There's a newspaper to read. You could have a sandwich and a bowl of soup and go around the putting green, and it fills your day. You can't do that at tennis clubs and basketball places. And it's just, but golf is quite unique. I can understand if people don't like it and find it boring or slow, pedestrian. It takes up a lot of ground, 100, 150 acres, takes time, but it's still a marvelous institution.
It is. And taking up all those acres, I'm glad the golf courses become preserves for the wildlife and just for nature. Think of all the people who want to build and put houses everywhere, take away the natural surroundings.
Oh, that's very true. And a lot of people complain and they say, golf courses use pesticides, insecticides. If you take a farm of similar acreage, they use 20 times more chemicals than they ever put on a golf course. Why? Because a golf course of 120, 30 acres, the only cultivated bits are about 50 acres, 45, 50 acres. The rest is rough or trees or bushes or whatever. So people are... They just they don't think before they talk.
They unfortunately, so many don't. In speaking and in your presenting in your personal life, and then golfing, what are some of the most unusual things that have happened to you on the golf course? It is really what I would like to get to. You've been in so many different circumstances with your father as a BBC commentator. What have you seen that really shocked you or surprised you or just flabbergasted?
Well, that's a very difficult question. I don't think there are many. You see bits of wildlife. I played golf in South Africa and seen crocodiles and rhinoceroses and giraffes. I was there at Royal Birkdale for the Open Championship when Sandy Lyle has just won the Open Championship, and a beautiful girl topless leapt out and grabbed him and gave him a kiss, and there was a photographer there taking a picture, and it was on in our famous Sun newspaper the next day. You never know, but things don't, extraordinary things don't happen too often on golf courses. Extraordinary things sometimes happen. A seagull will come down and pick up a golf ball or fly away, or somebody throws clubs in the sea. Well, they do silly things.
But yeah.
I was playing with one of our members once, and he was a very vitriolic man, and he threw his bag of clubs in the lake, and it was about 5 foot deep, the water, and about an hour later, it was very close to the 18th green, the clubhouse, and he was seen going into the lake. His car keys were in the bag, and so he had to get fine, grumbling about it, and all the mud and dirt and stuff, looking for his golf bag.
So
people who play golf, there's a lot of good stuff written about golf, and I don't know. You don't. I've never heard jokes about American football. I've never heard a basketball joke. I've never heard, but you hear lots of golfing jokes. And stories. I've never heard any stories about American football or basketball. Jokes.
No.
On the occasion.
Right. Well, there aren't many football, soccer, that kind of football stories.
No, there aren't many.
No, they're not. They're not. But I was kind of getting to Alice's 19th hole, Trivial Delights from the World of Golf, another one of your books.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in it's a treasure trove, difficult time speaking this morning, of golf trivia. Where did
Well, there's all sorts of little things happen. They produced a book for many years called The Golfer's Handbook. And there are hundreds of, if you go back years and years, matches that have been played for money, big money matches, people playing, taking on others with just using one club or playing blindfolded or golfers against people
yes.
with a bow and arrow and all this sort of stuff, you know.
Okay, all right. Amazing. And another one is your autobiography. Your father, of course, a golfer himself, a professional golfer. Where was he born?
Where was he born?
Mm-hmm.
He was born in Sheffield, in our county of Yorkshire, which is England's equivalent of Texas. Everywhere, it's the biggest county, or state, as you would say, in Britain. And the people there are a little bit different, and they think they're different. They're quite brusque and they're quite humorous and they're quite hard and careful with money and they think they're rather grand, just like Texans.
Oh, right, the Texans. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, but you decided to leave school when you were 14?
Well, I played in the boys' championship and I got to the semi-final and I got beaten and my father, on the way home in the train, 1946... He said, there's no point in you, you're not going to be a doctor, lawyer, accountant. You can become my unpaid assistant. And that's what I did. I became his unpaid assistant and learned my trade and went on from there.
And became a professional golfer at the age of 16.
My father took out my papers, yeah, when I was 16.
Yeah. As far as other kids turning professional young, you probably wouldn't argue against that?
Well, it was different then. I didn't go into golf to be the best player in the world. I went because it was a job, and you were a club professional. We had virtually no tournament players when I played in Britain. You had to be attached to a golf club. You had to be in charge of the golf shop. You gave lessons. You looked after the members' needs, and then you played tournaments. And played in Ryder Cups if you were good enough, and later the Canada Cup, which became World Cup, that sort of thing. Now, none of the players today would know what you're talking about if you said the club life, or Arnold Palmer would, probably Arnold would understand because his father was a golf pro or was involved in a business up in Pennsylvania, but none of the others would, and Rory McIlroy will never stand in a shop and sell someone a packet of teas or give somebody a lesson. Is that what the hell you're talking about?
Right. Peter Alice, will you be coming to the States to receive your World Golf Hall of Fame induction?
Well, I'm coming in 3 weeks' time. I'm working at the Masters for the BBC, which will be about I got my first invitation to play in the Masters in 1955. I got seven invitations, and only went twice. Which people can't believe now, but then the Ryder Cup teams were invited every year. But it was a long way to come. It took, a day and a half, 2 days to get there. There were all the great players of the day, the Nelsons and the Hogans and the Jimmy Demarets waiting for you. So, and if you didn't qualify, you got about $250. There were $4 to the pound. So it wasn't a commercial proposition, which is hard to believe now.
The music has started. That means they're shooing me off.
Ah, well, nice talking to you, Danielle.
Always. Peter Alice, thanks for being on The Golf Club.
Thank you for talking with me. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. I'd like to thank our sponsors for making it possible. Poipu Bay Golf Course, combining the beauty of nature and the design of Robert Trent Jones, Jr., bordered by emerald green mountains, 30 acres of tropical plants, and ancient places of worship. Poipu Bay. Alakai Mechanical, the best minds in plumbing and air conditioning. You've got it all right there with new roofs, flashing gutters, downspouts, AC ducts, stainless steel counters, Alakai Mechanical, and Star Protection. protection for your property threat and risk assessment, protection for your home or your business, get the STAR team on your property. We'll be back next week with the best of the Golf Club Radio Show. I'm looking forward to seeing you again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, thank you for your mana, and may you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker, and this is the Golf Club.
Listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2012.